Welcome to Alphabet Scoop. We talked a little bit last week about how this show has long been in the works, and after last week's episode, which we did end up publishing, by the way, you can search for Alphabet Scoop wherever you get podcasts to check that out. It's now time for the inaugural episode. This is episode one, and thanks for joining us. As we mentioned last week, and we'll probably no longer mention this going forward, but Alphabet Scoop is a weekly hour-long show where we'll chat about everything that's happening in the realm of Google and Alphabet, sharing our own thoughts on the week's most important stories, and as often as possible, we hope to have some rumors and mini scoops thrown in based on the things we've heard from people with more privileged knowledge. And of course, we'll use this as a platform for expanding on our own reporting that you can find every single day at 9to5google.com. So, without further ado, let's just jump in. I'm Stephen Hall, and I'll be joined every week by a guest. This week, we once again have the app aficionado, Abner Lee. How are you, Abner?
I'm excited to be back. So, let's get started. While there were no developer previews dropping this week, there's still a whole lot to talk about. Last week, we ended the show chatting about Google's plans to host a funhouse at South by Southwest in Austin. So I think that would be a good place to start off.
Yeah, so I had the opportunity to head down to Austin last weekend. I woke up at like 4 a.m., I think, on Saturday morning so that I could make it down there and get my badge and, you know, get all signed in and have the opportunity to go to the funhouse. It's interesting that Google actually used the Austin Fiberspace as kind of the hub for all of their activities at South By. The funhouse is actually across the highway on the other side of I-35 on Cesar Chavez Street in an old Victorian-style home. And Google had more, though, than just this funhouse that they were doing at South By. First of all, the first thing I noticed was the assistant hopper cabs, which were driving all around the city and basically giving people free rides to wherever they wanted to be. Besides the hopper cabs, Google was also hosting these phone booths at the Fairmont near the convention center. Which they basically were there to showcase different capabilities of the assistant, but I think that Google was using them as a way to promote what was going on across the highway at the funhouse. There was actually a little mailbox after you participated in the phone booths that gave you a little card telling you to head across the highway or to grab a Google Hopper cab if you wanted to check out, you know, more about Google Assistant and things. So
what was in the phone booth? Was it a tablet, or what was the setup inside like?
There were a few different ones. I didn't actually get to go inside them, so I can't say specifically, but I do know there were a couple that had Google Homes inside, and they were just demoing, you know, the very basic capabilities of Google Home. Mm-hmm. And, you know, after doing that, checking those out, I headed across the highway by way of a Google Assistant Hopper cab to check out the funhouse, which, you know, basically the funhouse was just a big demonstration of everything that Google Assistant can do. I mean, I walked in and they had out in the yard the bouncy car, which I don't know. It's just pretty cool to see.
How's that tied? How is a bouncy car tied? Was it Android Auto? Assistant
No, it wasn't Android Auto or anything. I really don't know how it was tied. I think that when I didn't actually get to go in it, but I think that when you went in, you could say something like "Okay, Google, bounce" or something like that.
Oh my gosh!
Okay. And then there was someone that had a big red button, and they pressed it, and then you know you can check out the video on 9to5google.com.
It was a button. It wasn't even your voice directly pressing it.
No, it was just a button.
Oh, that's
so
sad. That's
yeah, really missed sad. Opportunity there. But other than that, you know, it was just a bunch of rooms. There was one for just showcasing the Pixelbook. They were showing off Google Homes and Chromecast devices and Nest thermostats. In particular, one thing that, you know, caught my eye was these just wacky demos with like very proprietary hardware. So this isn't stuff that you can buy off the shelf, but Google made inside the house, for instance, a rotating spice rack in the kitchen that you could say, "Okay, Google, get me the paprika." And this huge spice rack would rotate to, you know, get you the spice that you needed. So
that is a very... I'm sure there are people who would very much appreciate that somewhere in the
world.
Yeah,
it's funny. A lot of the, you know, very custom assistant functionality that they designed for the house were the things that the people that were there touring, I think they had the biggest reactions to. So in my head, I was thinking like, Yeah, sorry to burst your bubble, but
These don't exist.
these don't exist. Yeah, but yeah, it was primarily an assistant showcase, but they also showed off, you know, Nest thermostats, Nest Cam IQ. There was one room that had, you know, a pet. They had like a pet room that they were just showing how you could watch your dog using a Nest Cam. And I mean, my favorite part was afterward, they had lots of free food in the backyard. So overall, I mean, I think it was a pretty cool, you know, a little event. It was, and you know, it was a big advertisement. I mean, there's lots of partners that they're trying to reach through this, but there's also just lots of people that go to South by for fun, and I guess this was an opportunity to introduce Google Assistant and Google's other products, you know, to the masses. But yeah, it was pretty fun.
Nice. I hope Google does this in many more places. Last year with the Google Home, they had multiple donut shops because the Home Mini is like it's basically the size of a donut, and they took that to several cities. I definitely hope they keep going there because these demos, as you said, that's what people like. They're cool, they're futuristic. It's weird, but in a good way.
Yeah, I would say that these were very similar to what we've seen before with the donut shops for the mini and, you know, with what Google did at CES 2018 in Las Vegas, which I frankly didn't get to go in because the lines were so long. But as far as I could tell from the outside, it was basically just one big showcase for everything Google's doing. And I think that's just really cool to see, you know, in 2018 that Google's really doubling down and saying, you know, we're more than a search engine. We have hardware products, we have services, and you know, lots of normal people should use them. And on that note, this week was filled with lots of assistant announcements, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. It started with routines. A long time coming, they were first unveiled at Google's hardware event last year in October, and it was announced again just before MWC during that flood of assistant news. So routines are basically, they allow you to string together multiple commands with just one phrase. For example, when you say, "I'm home," you can turn off the lights or adjust the thermostat, as well as begin to play some media with options including a music, podcasts, audiobooks, that kind of thing. As of Friday, all six preset routines are rolling out. For the moment, you're limited to these six basic areas like "I'm home," "Good night," "Good morning." But they are very customizable in themselves. You can set multiple phrases, multiple commands to activate each one, but hopefully you'll be able to expand from those six in the future. These routines are great for home automation, which one of us recently got a house decked out in Nest products.
Yeah, so I have recently received a bunch of Nest products, review units from Google, and I'm setting them up. I've spent basically this whole week setting up my Nest Thermostat E, which was very easy to install. I was happy to find out. I have a Nest Cam IQ indoor, which I've been using to keep an eye on my new puppy. So, yeah, unfortunately, he couldn't be a guest on this show, but know that he's here in spirit. His name's Bo, and he's adorable. And then also, I have the Nest Secure system, which also was very easy to install. I was surprised. I mean, I've never had or needed a security system before, but this one, I mean, it's user-friendly enough that I think I'm gonna use it a lot. I mean, all I had to do was, in the case of Nest Secure, was install, you know, a couple sensors on the doors, and then it also includes these tags. So, you know, you walk in and the Nest Secure says, you know, it notices that the door was opened, and then you can just tap your little Nest tag on it and it will completely disarm the system. So there's a few different ways that you can disarm the system. You can use the app, of course. I mean, everything with Nest can all be controlled through the Nest app, and I think primarily that's what a lot of people will use. But you can also use a PIN code on the top of the device, and also you can tap it with the Nest tag. So altogether, I've just been really impressed with the entire setup. I know a lot of these products, you know, have been around for a while. The Nest thermostat has been around for what, like half a decade now. I'm really late to the game here, obviously. But you know, I'm really happy, especially the Nest thermostat E. I mean, like after just a week of using it, it has learned that I like to have the temperature like 5 degrees warmer in the mornings. And so this morning I happened to wake up to it 76 inside the house. And then by noon, it had automatically lowered it back down to about 70 or 71. So overall, you know, I mean, none of this is groundbreaking or new, really. But what is new this week, you may have missed it, but not you, Abner, but those listening may have missed it. But Nest actually announced a brand new product, which is the Nest Temperature Sensor. It's a little $39 accessory that goes with your Nest thermostat. And this is actually something I also noticed this week, was that the back of my house kind of tends to be a couple degrees cooler than the rest of the house. And this new product from Nest actually addresses that. Basically, you can install this temperature sensor in any one of the rooms in your house, or you can install them in multiple rooms. It doesn't really matter. But you can install one in any room of your house, and you can tell the Nest app to prioritize the temperature of the whole house based on the temperature in that room.
So when you were setting it up and you noticed the temperature was different, did the app tell you that, or did you notice it?
No, I noticed it. I mean, I could tell walking throughout my house. My house was built in 1940, so obviously it doesn't have the best insulation. But I can just notice when I walk into a room in the back of my house that it's cooler. And, you know, my mind goes to thinking, like, I could install smart vents. You know, those are a thing. And I could try to use smart vents to try and, you know,
even it out
a little bit. Ultimately, that's a very expensive fix. And it's now cool to see that I can pay $39 and install the sensor in my room, and it'll prioritize that room's temperature, which obviously has implications for the rest of the house. So, you know, if I'm prioritizing the temperature in the cold part of the house, and, you know, I want that room to be 75, the rest of the house is naturally warmer, so the rest of the house is going to be a little higher than 75.
So the reason I asked whether the Nest app or whatever alerted you to it is because when we were talking about the assistant, you said that many people were interested in these niche gadgets that will never see the light of day. And the way I see it is that if you want people to add smart devices that may seem superfluous to their already existing products, you need the product needs to be a bit active. It needs to give you notifications, tell you cool things. So I was a bit surprised that the Nest isn't going for a more automated feel, for a more proactive feel. But hopefully the close integration between the Google hardware division and Nest in the future solves that.
Yeah, I think that they're kind of doing both. I mean, even just this week we saw the Nest Hello doorbell and the Nest Yale lock both were, you know, made available to buy. And normally the Nest Secure, you know, security system is a little bit more on the manual side of things. But with the Nest Yale lock now available, it actually knows, it's tying in. So it knows that if you leave the house and you use the Nest Yale lock to lock your door, it knows to arm the security system. So I think as the ecosystem develops more, we'll see more automation and less of the manual control.
You said you've had all this set up for a week. Could you go back to living without it?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, in a way, I mean, I've never really had a security system before, so this is my first experience with that. And on the thermostat side of things, it's funny. I actually immediately walked into this house and felt like the thermostat, you know, the thermostat, I'm pretty sure is like, it was installed in the 90s or something, so it was pretty outdated, and I had a hard time figuring out how to use it. So I don't know if that has something to do with my own intelligence. But I honestly, based on the labels and the way, it just wasn't very intuitive. So, I mean, I think it would be annoying to go back to that, coming from the Nest thermostat, which is just simply a dial, which I love. I love that it's this display. I mean, on top of that, the thermostat E, I love the design of this thing even more than the original Nest thermostat, because it's so minimal and it's got this frosted glass.
I definitely agree. It looks more home-like, where the original Nest thermostats were very chrome and scream technology, the Nest thermostat E is so subtle.
Yeah, I think the original Nest thermostat definitely had some Tony Fadell influence in the design. But yeah, I think design, it, with all of the rest of the Nest products ever since the Nest thermostat, has kind of moved in this matte white look that I think fits much better in the home. So I think overall, you know, my impressions with Nest this week are, you know, almost entirely positive. I haven't really had any problems to speak of. The only thing I've noticed really is that there really aren't, I'm surprised that there aren't really that many Google Assistant integrations yet. With the Nest Cam IQ, I think, I'm not even sure, but I think you can turn it on and off. And then with the thermostat, you can control temperature. And I think that's pretty much the extent of it. And I think just this week, actually, they added the ability to arm the security system using Assistant. So it's been a slow crawl, I think, for integrating between Nest and Google. But I guess that makes sense considering Nest just recently came back under the Google umbrella. So hopefully we'll see that flesh out a little bit more in the coming weeks and months.
Definitely. I think one feature that's also coming soon is the ability for, if you have a Chromecast attached to a TV and a Google Home, you'll be able to see the live feed from the security camera on the TV. So that's
yes. Actually, I think that's already out.
Sweet. That's
but I don't. I saw that. I saw that. I think in the Google Home app as an option, but I don't. Do you know what is the practical use case for that? Is there one?
So basically, let's say you hear the doorbell ring, and then you want to know who it is, and you say, "Hartwood, show me who's at the front door." And in theory, it lights up your television with that live camera feed.
So I guess the real life case is like you're sitting in bed or something, and someone rings the doorbell and you don't want to get up.
Basically, yeah.
You're too lazy to get up, so you tell Google to play the footage of the Nest Cam IQ on your television in your bedroom so that you don't have to move in case you don't want to go get the door.
Well, when you put it that way, we sound all lazy.
I'm sure there's a real use case out there, but to me that one seems pretty, I don't know. I don't know if I would use that personally.
So while you were at South By exploring the Funhouse, this weekend we also got our first hints that Google is rebranding Android Wear to Wear OS. And on Thursday, this officially happened. So Google is renaming Android Wear to simply Wear OS by Google.
So it's Watch OS.
Yes, it's a bit similar to Apple's naming scheme, but in my opinion, the Wear name has always been good, and then wears and wearables could be expanded to so much more things than smartwatches, which Google in their announcement blog post hinted at that, at its early days, a favorite phrase of theirs. The other upside of renaming Android Wear is to get rid of the Android name. Since Thursday, Google has updated the Android Companion app, which to me looks like a very Android P-like design. So the app, the background is now white, and it makes heavy use of rounded cars to show off watch faces. So on the actual watch itself, we've seen a new boot animation, which again makes use of the four Google dots to form this new abstract W logo that's made up of dots and slashes. It's very clever to me. And on the versions page, it interestingly says Wear OS by Google 1.0.
Yeah, I think one of the main criticisms that people have is that it's pretty rare for companies like Google or companies as large as Google to rebrand one of their most forefront products without also simultaneously launching some kind of big feature overhaul. So it just seems odd that, you know, Android Wear has all of these problems and they haven't made any significant changes to Android Wear really since Android Wear 2.0 came out alongside the LG Watch Style and LG Watch Sport, which as far as I know have been relatively unsuccessful in retail terms. it's just weird to see the first announcement that they've made since then to be just a simple new logo.
There's always a question of how much Google cares about its products. Google will never shake that from killing Google Wave or more beloved things like Google Reader. So this is a valid question, a valid critique of how Google does things. But I agree, this isn't a very good rollout. Like you said, all they had was a name and a logo.
I mean, I think the buy Google part is very striking to me.
The buy Google part is very interesting in that it directly replaces Android, this crazy successful OS that is one of their biggest hits since Search. And it seems they're moving away from this Android branding, Android Pay to Google Pay, which makes sense, but they are dropping a very successful name.
Yeah, I mean, I actually noticed this all the way back around the time of the launch of the first Pixel. One of my very first takeaways, and I don't think very many other people noticed this, or if they did, they didn't really mention it. But on the original Google Pixel, all the way back in the fall of 2016, with my review unit, the first thing I noticed with it was that it didn't have Android branding when you boot up. Now, I will say that the current Pixel does have Android branding in the boot screen, but the original Pixel didn't at first. And in fact, nothing on the OS, even on the box, there was, I think, if I'm remembering correctly, there was no mention of Android on the retail box for the Google Pixel, which was odd at the time. There was no Android boot screen, as I mentioned, and the only mention of Android in the entire operating system that I could find was the Android Pay app, which now is Google Pay, so if we went back in time, that wouldn't even be there. And then the mention of the Android version deep in the settings app. Those were the only things there.
It makes sense to remove the Android name if Google wants to break out the connotations around Android as a not-so-premium branding, but it's...
Yeah, there's the whole green bubble thing.
Yes, on messaging, there's that stigma, I would call it. But do you think the Android branding or the Google branding is stronger in the long haul?
So this made by Google thing, which is basically the big brand for all of Google's hardware efforts, is, I think, the new primary focus of Google's kind of public-facing brand. Like you say, I think part of the reason the Android brand is going away is because it does have this kind of connotation, at least in the United States. I've been told by some people outside the United States that maybe this connotation doesn't exist, but we have to remember that Made by Google is kind of primarily a United States brand at the moment. They haven't really done that much international expansion, at least not yet. But I think it does, at least in the United States, have this connotation of being kind of low-end, kind of lesser than the high-end nature of Apple's products. But I think that having an Android phone kind of suggests that, you know, your phone is not as good as the rest. And I think what Google's trying to do with Google Pixel is take on Apple directly, take on the iPhone. And I think that one of the ways that they're doing that, you know, I don't think that the Android brand is going to go away entirely. But I did like one point that someone made yesterday. I don't remember who it was, but they said that Android is kind of going away as a public-facing marketing brand, but is probably here to stay as the name of an operating system.
At the end of the day, I think it ruffles the tech enthused among us that this Android name's going away. But on something like Android Wear, now Wear OS, it makes a lot of sense. In the blog post announcing this change, Google noted that there are a lot of iOS users for Android Wear, and the name and switching to something generic as Wear OS by Google definitely helps that. The Pixel is going after that luxury market. Android Wear is adopted by a lot of fashion manufacturers making these smartwatches. So getting a new name might help in this exact case for smartwatches and Google's efforts in the space.
And I, as I mentioned on Twitter, I think another aspect here is that Android itself sounds techie. It sounds kind of enthusiast. It sounds very robotic because it is. And Android literally is a robot. And I think that what Google's trying to do with the Made by Google brand is kind of the opposite. They are advertising, hey Google, okay Google. They're trying to make Google as a brand the most human brand possible. So I think that from a philosophical standpoint, it makes sense that Google is kind of de-emphasizing this on, from a big picture perspective. They are smart, I think, to follow in footsteps of other major companies who are humanizing their brands.
I know you said earlier that you don't think the name of Android for the OS itself is going, but taken to a logical conclusion, do you think we're going to see that name go away first, or would Google rather just announce a new project like Fuchsia as the public-facing way to brand all this?
I have absolutely no clue. I think it's way too early to really know. But I will say the trend does look like we're moving away from the Android brand, at least from a public-facing perspective. But like I said, it's too early to know. I mean, Fuchsia is a whole other conversation. I even mentioned last week the possibility that Fuchsia could be publicly branded as Android. So, you know, it could go either way, or Fuchsia could be publicly branded as,
Phone
I don't
OS.
know, something generic, Phone OS or Google OS. I don't know. But kind of on along this vein, we have been hearing some things about what's going on with Wear OS from one of our sources. And let me add the disclaimer here that this is entirely uncorroborated. But this source says that there is a watch coming. I don't know if that will be next week at Baselworld. I don't know if this will be at I/O. I don't know if this means Google's planning to launch a watch at its Made by Google event, presumably later this year. I don't even know if this might be a partner watch. But this source does say that there is a watch of some kind in the works, and oddly just happened to note its battery life, which they say is significantly improved. It apparently gets at least a couple days worth, which would be better than pretty much every watch in the market. But then the source has also given us some information about where the Wear OS is going, which I don't know. I mean, maybe Google has a entirely separate version of Wear OS that's planning for a theoretical retail Google Watch, you know, kind of to be paired with the Pixel phone to take on Apple directly. Maybe that's in the plans. This is all pure theoreticals from me, from my perspective. But Wear OS, apparently, according to this source, who has been right several times before, they say that Wear OS is getting some kind of low energy mode. Apparently, I'm assuming that's kind of connected to this battery life thing, that it might get at least a couple days worth of battery life. And then also a new fitness app and features related to that fitness app. And then new watch to phone interactions. And I think the most interesting thing here, besides the battery life thing, is the new fitness app, which, as you know, Abner, is probably one of the biggest selling points of the Apple Watch.
Definitely. So let's look into the supposed features that are coming. Low energy mode. Android Wear has been updated several times with smaller updates that no longer require a full OS version. These smaller updates have brought new features, new themes. One of those recent features is a battery saver. It's the same battery saver that's always existed when your battery life goes down to 10-15%, but now it can be manually enabled with a toggle. Meanwhile, on the fitness front, Google Fit. They've had this product for a long time. It's a fine product, but compared to the Apple Watch's offerings, which I do wear, despite the fact that I use an Android phone mostly, I do have a watch, an Apple Watch, all the time on me, which is a whole other mess that we can go into at another time. But Google is realizing that fitness is something that people want to do with smartwatches.
Yeah, I think that obviously we've seen Fitbit be very successful. I mean, there aren't that many successful entries into the wearable space. We have Apple with the Apple Watch, and it has been successful, I think, a large part because it is part of a much larger ecosystem. And then we have Fitbit, which is kind of platform neutral and works across platforms, but they focus primarily on fitness. And as we both know, Apple has also focused heavily on fitness with, for instance, the Apple Watch Series 3, which launched last year and kind of showcased how having these LTE capabilities can let you use it for different kinds of fitness applications.
The last thing that we were told that's supposedly coming is new watch-to-phone interactions. At the moment, if you do a Google Assistant search on the watch for the weather, let's say, there's a button to send it to your phone to see the full forecast, or with directions, it's the same thing.
Yeah, I mean, these phone-to-watch interactions are, you know, nothing new. We've seen them since some of the earliest versions of Android Wear, and I think, you know, this idea of handoff between wearable devices and our phones and our laptops is not really new. But I honestly have no idea. All we were told is that there's new watch-to-phone interactions coming, if they are indeed coming, which, as I said, the source has been right before, but this is all this information is entirely, you know, unconfirmed. We haven't confirmed it with any other sources. If these watch-to-phone interactions are coming, I honestly can't imagine anything other than what we already have. But if any of our listeners have any idea of what Wear OS might be adding in terms of watch-to-phone interactions, feel free to leave us a comment and let us know.
And what do you want? How do you want a watch and your phone to work better together?
That assumes I wear a smartwatch.
That is true.
I haven't worn an Android Wear smartwatch in over a year, and I'm kind of in an off again on again relationship with my Apple Watch. My biggest problem, it's cool to me to see that we have hints that battery is an area that they're focusing on, because I personally can't get myself to keep my smartwatch charged enough for the utility that it provides me.
What you're describing in terms of use is very similar to Google Assistant. It's the same problem Google is having with smart assistants that everybody is having with smart assistants. And notably, if you go to this new Wear OS page, Hey Google and OK Google are at the forefront of the advertising. So maybe there's something there. This just maybe.
Yeah, I think that for me is what would make a smartwatch valuable, especially a Wear OS smartwatch, is that if it was a Google Home that lived on my wrist and it had good battery life, so I didn't have to worry about it that much, you know, maybe charge it once every few days or something like that, and it was just an always listening OK Google that tied in with all of my Nest products and tied in with all of my all existing Google Homes and stuff, that might be a compelling product for me if the price was right.
As it would be for me. I weirdly wear an Apple Watch when my main platform is Android, and I would love to receive notifications.
Yeah, I mean, and the time that I've spent on my Apple Watch, my primary platform is Android as well. So with my Apple Watch, I primarily use it as a watch. So my expectations are really not that high. Okay, so on the topic of things that we're hearing that haven't been corroborated, I thought this might be a good place to throw in a few tidbits related to a topic that we spent a lot more time on last week, and that is Android P. Obviously, Android P already has a lot of interesting user-facing features, like the screenshot editor, the new volume slider, redesigned notifications, the new settings menu, notch support, which isn't user-facing yet, but probably will be very soon. But one separate birdie suggests that the most obvious changes coming to Android P actually weren't in the first developer preview. This information comes from, as I said, a separate source who has been right before, so that's why we are giving any of this information credibility. But this internal build of Android P that this person has seen is running a April or May security patch, so it's a month or two ahead of the developer preview 1. And apparently, it has an iPhone X-like user interface. What do you think of that, Abner?
gestures have always made sense from the early days of webOS to what the iPhone X is popularizing right now.
Yeah, I think it's funny actually because one of my biggest gripes with Android is that Apple has a patent on the swipe to go back a screen kind of gesture, which I think is just one of the greatest parts of navigating the iOS interface. And yet Android is kind of stuck using that back button or the back arrow, and there's a lot of inconsistencies about which screens use the back button to go back and which screens use the up the top left, you know, back arrow to go back. But then again, it's also the case now on iOS with that tiny little go back button in the top left and then also the back arrow. And so we can't really blame Android for that. We just need a little bit of innovation in terms of mobile operating system navigation. So to me, it's good to see that this is kind of in the works, that Google, at least in this version, which, you know, just for a disclaimer again, we don't know if this version that our source has seen will be, you know, an official Android P build. We don't know if this is coming with Developer Preview 2. We don't know if this is coming with the Golden Master release later this fall. We don't know if this is going to be Pixel only, but we do know that there is an Android P phone out there that's running a slightly newer version of Android P Developer Preview that has this iPhone X-like UI. As for the details of that, it's apparently missing the multitasking button entirely. So it does away with the traditional system for multitasking on Android, and apparently the back button hides itself when it's not in use. So I don't know exactly how that will work functionally, but I kind of imagine a situation similar to the fading home button that we kind of have right now on the Pixel phones. And then the main home button on this build of Android P that our source saw apparently has a bar alongside of the bottom instead of the flowery kind of home button that we have now. Apparently you can still press it to activate the Google Assistant or press and hold to activate the Google Assistant, but this white bar, it's kind of a horizontal bar, it is now used as kind of the area to swipe up to invoke the multitasking, very similar to the iPhone X. Apparently the cards are a lot like the iPhone, but instead of the kind of slanted cards, the angled cards that we have on iOS, they just face flat forward.
So I think this solves a real problem that Android has in terms of back button consistency. For the most part, there's always two ways to go back. In an app, there's the one in the top left corner that's built into the app, and then there's the system solution, which is the nav bar. With an auto-hiding solution, Android becomes so much more consistent, more straightforward, and one of the gripes that you always hear iOS users talk about is the back button. It's how so inconsistent it is on Android. There's two. But I think this is a very real way for Google to solve this problem and make the user experience just more consistent.
Yeah, I agree. I think that it'll be really interesting. But, I mean, on the other side of things is that it's just kind of disappointing to see that this is yet another thing. I mean, you can count the features in Android P that are basically imitating the iPhone X. And if this comes to be, which again, it may not, but we can say with confidence that this build at least exists somewhere in the hands of a Google developer somewhere. But if this comes out, it's yet another thing that Google's kind of doing that mimics the iPhone. The notch itself and every Android OEM that's kind of basically mimicking what Apple's doing there. And now if this swipe up gesture based navigation, which having used the iPhone X myself, I think that gesture based navigation from an objective standpoint is the way to go. I think it's leaps and bounds better than the button based interface that Android has today. But that said, it's still effectively a copy of the iPhone and kind of the moves that Apple has already made. So in that sense, it's kind of disappointing to see, and hopefully Google's ideas here can kind of be fleshed out a little bit and made to be more unique and less kind of copycat.
I'd like to defend Android here and cite how WebOS, which Mateus Duarte is now the head of design, has been the longtime head of design at Google now, had this on WebOS. There was a swipe up gesture to reveal multitasking, and just in general, the idea of a flat bar has existed before on other platforms to great success. But again, I do have to be a bit more harsh, because from the Android OEM makers, it definitely seems like a response to the iPhone X, and it'll be very interesting to see what direction Google decides to go in with the Pixel 3 for October, whether or not there's a notch.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, but yes, I do see that, and I do understand that, you know, pretty much everyone in Silicon Valley pretty much copies everyone else in Silicon Valley, so there's really nothing that's original at all. With that said, I think we can move on from Android P and talk about another little exclusive that we had this week, which was Android Messages 3.1. We got our hands on a dog food build of that version of the app, and what thoughts do you have on that, Abner?
So this beta version, that dog food is Google's internal term for early test versions, shows Google continuing to work on Android Messages for web. It'll allow users to sign into a messaging UI from the web that connects to their phone, much like how Google Allo's system currently works. And it is a real shot at challenging iMessage of adding an iMessage-like features to a billion-plus Android devices. And I really hope Google pursues this and that it will be adopted widely. Meanwhile, other new features in development for Android Messages, according to our teardown of version 3.1, is Smart Replies. Right now, Smart Replies, they analyze your conversation and give you text responses back. In the future, Smart Reply might analyze more things, like if you're talking about sending money, it'll suggest a little chip that says, send this person X amount of money, or if you're talking about where are you, it'll suggest that you share your location. And it's another sign that of more smart features of machine learning and AI encroaching into every corner of Google's products in a way that's hopefully very usable for users.
Yeah, so what other app news do we have this week, Abner?
On the app front, we have to do a little bit more follow-up on Google Assistant. So the Google Assistant app on iOS adds native support for the iPads and big screens, which matches how it took a bit for Android tablets to finally get Google Assistant. Meanwhile, Google Home adds another feature announced with Routines, which is the ability to set location reminders on the home on smart speaker and then have them sent to your phone, which is a very useful little feature. Meanwhile, with Google Lens on Android, it adds this cool now on tap like text selection where you can just point your phone at something with text and you can just copy and paste it to anything else. It's very useful, and I think as Lens rolls out an assistant more widely, that this is a feature that people will want to use Lens for. On the iOS side again, Google Lens is rolling out to Google Photos, giving iPhone users their first taste of this visual search feature. It's really smart to put in Photos, because Photos is universally beloved by iOS users, by anybody, and this is a very good intro for people who might not use Assistants, but might find value in Lens being able to pull out phone numbers and contacts rather than having to manually enter them. On Google's other properties, YouTube has finally announced a dark theme for its mobile apps. Just like the lab, you can now get a darker theme on iOS. It is rolling out now and should be available soon for all iOS users, while it's coming soon to Android. On the exact flip side, YouTube on the web is testing a very cool picture-in-picture mode where you can browse YouTube while watching. We just saw this late last night, and this is a very welcome addition. Meanwhile, ahead of the Game Developers Conference next week, Google Maps announced these new APIs that allow developers to build Pokemon Go-like apps on top of this rich location data. So developers can just rely on maps to provide the location, and with so many 3D objects, developers can just customize it and skin it and have all that hard work handled by Google. Hopefully this leads to a renaissance, a new augmented reality Pokemon Go-like experience that's fresh and new and exciting. So that is something to look forward to on the games front in the coming months.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to Star Wars Go.
Oh, that'd be a dream.
All right, so with your weekly dose of app news out of the way, I think it's about time we wrap this all up. We have an eventful few weeks ahead of us with Baselworld and potential Wear OS announcements there. Wear OS itself is, of course, rolling out to a couple dozen watches. You can read the full list of those on 9to5 Google. And Google Developer Day at GDC is next week. Also, pre-orders for Assistant Smart Display devices are going up very soon, and much more. So that gives you something to look forward to for next week's show. Thanks, as always, for joining me, Abner.
It's a pleasure, as always.
And thanks to everyone that tuned into this very first official episode of Alphabet Scoop. We record this every Friday and publish every Saturday morning, and you can find us in Google Play, iTunes, and Apple's Podcasts app, Pocket Casts, and anywhere else you might listen to podcasts. We'll see you next week.
Bye.